First, we're just having such a great conversation about infertility, and so I hope these sessions will be able to continue that conversation as a group. So the talk I'm giving today is about family building priorities for couples seeking care for infertility. No financial conflicts of interest to disclose. A couple of recognitions I want to make for our funders, the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, a National Research Service Award, and then also support from the Red Cap Project, which is hosted at the Medical College of Wisconsin CTSI. So a little bit of background. Infertility in the United States is prevalent. It's a significant problem. This graph shows data from 2011, a representative sample of women in the United States of reproductive age, which is 15 to 44. About 12% said that either they or their partners had at any point sought infertility services. And you can see, I also have it broken down here by age groups, and not surprisingly, when you pull 15 to 24-year-olds out of the mix, you can see that those percentages increase even higher. So it's not an uncommon problem. It's something a lot of people are facing. And when people are facing infertility, they have a lot of really difficult decisions to make. And of course, any healthcare condition is associated with difficult decisions. But I think infertility in particular can be troublesome for several reasons. First, that there are often multiple decision makers, oftentimes with couples who are seeking to get pregnant. And so you have to balance dual perspectives about what the priorities are, not to mention oftentimes other family members and communities and church communities have opinions as well about family building. There's also a lot of uncertainty about treatment efficacy. We don't have a lot of really good numbers to be able to say to an individual, okay, if you go with this treatment that costs this much money, there's this percent chance of success. So it's hard for people to know what will give them the greatest chance of an effective or successful outcome. Then there are also, of course, the high costs. Most insurance plans in most states do not cover infertility treatments. So a lot of people are looking at paying out of pocket for expensive treatments that they don't know for certain will work. And then there are also social pressures, again, related to the multiple decision makers, a lot of people who have opinions about how people should build their families and in many cases aren't afraid to voice those opinions to their friends, family members, and associates in different ways. So with all of that being said, the overall aim of this project is to improve our understanding about how couples make decisions about their options for building their families. And so specifically for this talk, we'll be looking at data that's assessing couples' stated priorities for building their families. You know, there are a lot of different factors that people have to consider when they're trying to decide what kinds of treatments or options to pursue. So just to orient you a little bit to the larger project that this data is coming from, it's a longitudinal project where we are talking with couples at six different time points, and we're giving people a battery of surveys and also semi-structured interviews. And so we're talking to each individual member of the couple separately after they schedule a consultation with a reproductive endocrinologist, but before they actually have that appointment, then we meet with them again within a week after that first consultation. Again, within a week after they receive any test results, or if they're not having testing, it's about 2 months after that first consult. Then we have follow-ups, again, 4 months after that first consult, 8 months after the first consult, and then again at 12 months after the first consult. And we're also hoping to be able to implement a survey at 18 months after the first consult to follow up, because for a lot of people, they don't necessarily have outcomes yet at that 12-month point. So the data I'll be showing today comes from the pre-consultation interview and then also from the 8-month follow-up. So a little bit about our participants. We were hoping to recruit 35 couples, and we actually have 37, which we're excited about, and we've had really great retention as well, which was a concern with a project this long. We were talking to people about really sensitive issues, but people have stayed in our study. And I also just want to mention the labels here of the subgroups. I have mother and support. And the reason it's not men and women or mother or father is because we have two same-sex female couples in our project. And so we're trying to think of a label. So one member of the couple is the person who would be treated to be pregnant, and the other member of the couple is the supporting partner. And so we ended up just with the sort of awkward shorthand of mother and support. But that's what that means. So each group has 37 people. And you can see for the age range, we have a wide range from 24 to 55 is the spread, with most people concentrated in their 30s, about 31 to 40. for race, it's a predominantly white group, which we anticipated. But we hadn't anticipated was the level of income diversity that we've been able to get in our study. We thought that we'd have mostly high-income people just because of the cost of so many treatments. But we were pleased to find that we actually have quite a range of individual income levels. And we also, I don't have it displayed here, but the same goes for educational attainment, that we have a larger spread there than we'd anticipated. So for the surveys that we gave people at this first time point and the 8-month follow-up, we developed a survey item asking people to rank different priorities and in terms of how important they are to them. So through cognitive interviews and some pilot testing, we came up with a list of 10 different priorities that people might consider when they're making decisions. And so then we give them the list of priorities and we give them this this item stem saying, you know, so here's a list of things people consider when they're deciding on their options. The options have different pros and cons. People value them differently. We would like you to rank each of these alternatives in terms of how important it is to you in deciding which options to pursue to try to have a child. And so, you know, we also acknowledge that these are difficult for people, which is something that came out in the cognitive interviews. A lot of people said, this is really hard. Like, how do you rank these different things against one another? But we've been happy people have been willing to indulge us and do their best with this this item. So just to go through the items quickly with you. So the first one is that I become a parent one way or another. So that's really looking at the efficacy of a treatment. So if that's the most important thing to you, then you might lean towards something like adoption, where the chance, people might talk about having more control over that outcome than something like IVF, where the chances are lower. We also have an item about experiencing pregnancy and childbirth. And so for this item, depending on whether you're the mother or the supporting partner, you get a little bit different version of the question. So for the supporting partner, they get the question that my partner gets to be the person who is pregnant with and gives birth to my child. And for the mother, they see that I am get to be the person who is pregnant with and gives birth to my child. We also have questions related to genetics, so that my child has my genes and that my child has my partner's genes, to the other items. That I have a child in the next year or two, so getting that timing, because some of the options people might pursue, like adoption in particular, depending on the kind of adoption, can be spread far into the future. Cost, which is a major issue for people. That I can build my family in a way that doesn't make it obvious to others that we had trouble, so that's getting at things like international adoption and sperm donors and those kinds of things. That I get to parent my child from birth. We have a lot of different kinds of adoption. Oftentimes you can get a child who's a little bit older, so we wanted to see if that's a priority for people. That I maintain a close and satisfying relationship with my partner. You probably won't be surprised to know there's a lot of stress associated with these different kinds of treatments and decision-making, so it can lead to disruptions in relationships. And that I avoid side effects from medical treatments. So those were all of the items that we gave people and asked them to rank them in importance to them from 1 to 10. So here are our results. This is from before that first consultation. And just to orient you to this graph a little bit, the right side of the graph is showing the percentage of mothers in red and supportive partners in blue who ranked this particular priority as one of their top three. And the left side of the graph is showing the percentages who ranked that priority in the bottom three. So just to point out a few of the major differences between mothers and supportive partners that have become apparent one way or another, you can see here at this first time point that far more mothers ranked this as a top priority than did supportive partners, and more supportive partners ranked it as a bottom priority than did mothers. For that the child has the mother's genes, interestingly enough, this was more important to supportive partners than it was to mothers, and less important to mothers than it was to supportive partners. Similarly with that the child has the support partner's genes. For the timing, having a child in the next year or two, again, mothers were much more likely to rank this in their top priorities than supportive partners. And what's kind of interesting here is that supportive partners, about 20% ranked it as one of their top three priorities, and about 20% ranked it as one of their bottom three priorities. So it's a little unclear there how to draw conclusions about that. For maintaining a close relationship with my partner, this is one that was important to both mothers and supportive partners, but supportive partners were more likely to rank it in their top three. And finally, for avoiding side effects from treatments, again, supportive partners were more likely to rank that as very important to them than were mothers. And this is the data for the 8-month follow-up. So again, just to draw your attention to a few different points. Here, again, for mothers, much more important to become a parent one way or another than supportive partners. That child has the supportive partner's genes, again, more important to the supportive partner than it was to mothers. The timing, again, more important to mothers than to supportive partners. And again, supportive partners were fairly divided on whether that was a top or bottom priority for them. For parenting a child from birth, that was more important to supportive partners than it was to mothers. And it's interesting, you can see the percentages kind of flip, the 25 and 14%, and then 14 and 25%. So there's a lot of disagreement there between the two sides. Again, a close relationship with my partner, very important to everybody, but still a difference there overall with supportive partners ranking that as more important than mothers. And then quickly, just a few things looking. This graph shows the data just for the mothers at the different time points, where the blue is pre-consult and the purple color is the 8-month follow-up. And so you can see some big differences there. So becoming a parent one way or another grew in importance for mothers. Being pregnant and giving birth declined in importance. That the child has the mother's genes became more important. And then you can see that cost at the pre-consult, more people ranked it as unimportant, and then at the 8-month follow-up, it became, you know, less likely to be least important for people. There were fewer differences for supportive partners over time. Here, the only significant difference was for parenting my child from birth, that at the 8-month follow-up, fewer supportive partners ranked that as very unimportant to them. And then just quickly here, you can see this is showing you the percentage of couples who agreed on the ranking of their top three priorities. So before that first consultation, only 3% of couples, which is one couple out of our 37, had the same three top priorities. About 47% of couples agreed on two of their top three priorities, 42% agreed on one of the three top priorities, and 8% of couples didn't have any top priorities in common. And then at the 8-month follow-up, those numbers didn't change too much. You can see there's still quite a bit of disagreement within couples about those priorities. And so just to go through a few conclusions and next steps that we're looking at. So one of the questions you might ask is, well, why do we care about this? Why is this important? Well, I mean, we are hypothesizing that if people are aware of and able to articulate and talk about their priorities, that that will improve communication between partners, and in the long run, it will lead to better decisions, more decisional satisfaction, and less decisional regret in the long run. And similarly, looking at it from the clinical side, we're also hoping that when people know and are able to articulate their priorities, that clinicians and healthcare providers in general will be able to provide people with better support, and that also will contribute to making better decisions in the long run, and less decisional regret and more decisional satisfaction. So thank you so much for your time.